And now, let's turn to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local officials, residents, and personalities providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome yet another personality from inside the city, Fire Chief McNutt. Welcome, Chief. Today, for many people, starts out being the first day of a four-day weekend. That's Memorial Day. A lot of people going to be doing all kinds of things, whether it's in their backyards or the front yards or somebody else's yard. It's the start, if it hasn't already begun for some people, of barbecue season, of going camping season, of going down by the river season. And yet, as I look around, even though we've had what some people have described as a kind of, wet, damp, cool beginning to the year, it seems awful dry out there.
The ground itself is fairly damp.
But if history is any guide, we do tend to have fires.
Oh, absolutely. I was actually talking to one of my members who also works for the U.S. Forest Service down in the Kenai during the summer. And when we were discussing the beginning of this wildland fire season, he was saying that he was reminded in 2015 it started off this way, very damp, very wet, spring-like season. And then that was also the year that the Sockeye fire happened. So the possibility does exist. Do not let your guard down. Don't think that because it's been raining and we've had quite a bit of moisture that it's safe to do whatever you feel out there. There's still the possible danger.
In the city of Palmer, how do you arrange to burn anything if it's going to be an open fire, not in your barbecue?
Well, there are two types of burn permits required inside the city limits, and that's year-round. We're not like forestry, which is just seasonal. Ours does go from January. We've just changed the dates, and now starts April 1st and goes all the way through the 31st of March of the next year. The requirements are there's a recreational burn permit, which is about 95% of the city. That would be like a campfire size, 3 foot by 3 foot, no taller than 3 foot. You're allowed to use it for cooking marshmallows or you have friends over for a party of some type. And so you could use your little twigs and things to help get the fire started, or feed that little fire while you're recreating. The other permit required is what they consider an ABC, which is your larger lawn clearing, brush clearing fires. But to have that permit, you have to have at least 2 acres or more inside the city limits.
Well, that's limiting.
And that's very limiting. There are very few properties that have 2 acres or more inside the city, but we do have a few, and they do periodically pick up a permit to help clear some of the brush away from their property.
So in sum, what you're saying is that a person really can't burn a fire unless it's in a barbecue unit.
Correct. Some type of what I really prefer is those units you can purchase that are pre-built. Mm-hmm. That keeps the fire down to the proper size that it needs to be safe for your regular recreational fire.
Okay. So you can't just on the ground in a circle of rocks throw some twigs in and burn them.
It all depends on how big that circle of rocks is. The permit is online. So if you were interested in how that works, you can go online to the City of Palmer and then link to the Palmer Fire page. And the permit is right there for recreational permit. The fire pit, as we call it, has to be at least 5 foot down to mineral soil or some type of non-combustible surface, which would be rocks. But that's 5 foot all the way around the outside edge of the fire. For recreational permit, that is a fire of 3 feet. So you'd have to have a 3 foot area and then 5 feet from the edge of that 3 foot area all the way around that to meet the criteria. I prefer you don't have just a pile of twigs or sticks laying on the ground because the wind can take that and blow it to your neighbor's house or your neighbor's property. Our recommendation is you have some type of ring to contain it in with a screen cover to keep the ash or embers from flying out in a way. It kind of keeps them contained inside that ring.
Okay. So, for example, there are these saucers that are found that sit on a supporting base with a screen type over it where people sometimes burn, sometimes wood, sometimes charcoal, et cetera. That would be okay.
Correct. That would be actually what we really enjoy to see because it does keep the fire to a manageable level. I've been around enough fires or been to enough calls where the fire started out as a small manageable level, but because there was no ring to contain it, people get excited and they start adding to it, and then it just begins to grow.
Okay. So, for example, one of the areas that has become increasingly popular recently is the river, riverbed.
Yes.
And I know that the city of Palmer extends to the bank. Who's responsible for the river?
That's always been a question, the way the river works. We have been called out there periodically for fires. And the good thing about the river is it is pretty much a down to mineral soil, earth cleared space.
Got it.
Where people are at. We do request they keep the fires small, just like they would anywhere else. I don't have a way to permit that because it's not owned by anybody but the city. A lot of times what will happen is somebody will call in a fire on the bank,
yeah,
the gravel bank there. We'll respond out. We'll take a look at it, and we'll make our recommendations. If it's too large, we will extinguish it and put it out. If it's a small campfire like some people have, we will discuss with them the safe burning, how that works. But if we feel there is a danger, we will extinguish that fire.
So you do have to take responsibility for the fires that are in the gravel.
Correct. That's still within my response zone. So that is up to me to go out there and make sure everything's safe.
Now, usually there's a channel. This is a wild river. And there's a channel of water. So what about the other side of the river? So we've got gravel on this side near to the city of Palmer. Then there's usually a channel of water. Then there's the other side of the gravel.
It all depends on how far down the old Glen Highway they are. Some of that is within my response zone. Others of it is within the Butte Fire response zone. So it really depends on whereabouts they are, whose jurisdiction it's going to fall into.
Okay. All right. But as you've nicely pointed out, given that there's a lot of gravel in that area, it's somewhat limited in terms of the potential danger.
Correct. Well, luckily, there is lots of gravel, lots of safe space to have the small fires. The large fires, those big bonfires, we will end up putting those out because they end up becoming more of a problem than they do anything else.
Okay. So I'm thinking about the city itself. Then you nicely described where people can go by going to the website and looking at the permitting requirements if there's a desire to do some burning. But then we go just up the Glen Highway, up Bailey Hill, and we're outside of the city of Palmer. But I know, because you've been in here and nicely described, that you have a relationship with the providers for service just outside the city. So a fire begins in, for example, we had that fire that began not so long ago up near Cedar Hills.
Correct.
And that was both in and outside the city. So someone starts burning outside the city there, and it gets away from them, as these can happen. You would respond to that in part with probably other services also respond?
Correct. We would respond to that emergency as well as, depending on what time of year it is, the State of Alaska Division of Forestry, their wildland fire units. Between the months of April and August, they are on call, available to go, usually during the daytime. If the fire does happen after their business hours, they do have to recall members in to respond to such emergencies. But they would respond with us during those times of year. Luckily, the year of the Cedar Hills fire, their crews were doing other tasks that year when the fire started and were actually getting ready to go off duty for the season and were able to be recalled in and used to help us fight that fire that year. We also have access to mutual aid companies for surrounding fire departments. And again, going to the Cedar Hills fire, we ended up with units from Butte, Sutton, Central Mat-Su, which is the Wasilla area, as well as we had a couple of units come all the way from the Big Lake area over to assist us with that. It even ended up getting as far as units from Shugiak and Anchorage were sent in later to help us because the fire had gone on for so long. We needed to give personnel rest. We were able to swap units out And forestry actually called in a few units from the Fairbanks area to come down and assist with us as well.
So it seems that there's a benefit to having forestry right here at this airport.
Absolutely. They're right there. They're very knowledgeable with the wildland. That's their bread and butter and what they do. Mm-hmm. And so we always appreciate having them on a scene.
Okay. Have you heard of any large fires in the state at the present time?
At the present time, I'm not aware of any major fires. I know earlier this year there was one up in near the Delta Junction area that okay. the units responded to. There was one other. I cannot remember the location of that one, though, at this time. But they have had a few larger fires happen throughout the state, but nothing that's been extremely large or caught attention or made us too concerned.
Okay. Now, beyond that, I'm as we were just talking here, I'm thinking – are there in your mind places both within and without the city that are potentially more dangerous as being a place where a fire would begin? That's kind of a general question.
Yes, inside the city, not too bad. They're it's pretty safe around the inside of the city. The only place that may come to my mind where there could be potential would be down in the Mat River Park area.
Okay.
Because you have the campers that are traveling through. So they're out-of-state people. They're not quite familiar with the environment that we have up here. They're used to what they do down in the lower 48. So there could be potential in that location. Otherwise, the rest of the city I would probably consider fairly safe. It's well maintained. Outside the city, of course, there's a lot of wooded area or unmaintained area, so there is more potential out there for something to happen, which is what happened in the past. We'll go back to that Cedar Hills fire. That one there was just a matter of chance, I guess, that there was tall grasses that hadn't been covered with snow yet because it was about mm-hmm. November when
right.
that fire kicked off. And it just happened to be one of our wind events that knocked a vehicle over that sent sparks and embers into the grass and then took off because it was wind fed. So outside your city where there's less, I guess, maintenance to the environment, you're going to have a bigger potential.
So that leads into the question, since many people are out and about in the early stages of taking care of their yards, planting gardens and so on, still have energy, haven't been worn down by weeding and all the rest. I know in the past the borough has had a sponsored program of fire safety to come in, take a look at the property, remind you that maybe having all of those spruce trees right next to your house is not a good idea, et cetera. Do you have any program from the Palmer Fire Department that would help people assess and encourage the removal of fire material from around their house, for example?
We do not have an official program, but if you contact us, we can have personnel come out, take a look, and help you with it. That program you're talking about was called FireWise.
Right.
And it was out there to help people make defensible space around your home to help keep the wildland fires, if they do happen, to a minimum to save as much property as we can. So we are available to make a time schedule, come out and see you. Some quick things you can do right now, though, that I can talk about is make sure that you are keeping it probably about a 30 to 50 foot clear space around your home. Get rid of those trees, shrubs, keep your lawn mowed to a low level so it's not going to be tall grasses. Do not, if you have a wood burning stove, do not take that wood and stack it right directly next to your house. We find that a lot, especially outside the city limits where people have taken all of their wood and they don't want to walk very far in the wintertime in the snow, and
right.
understand that. But when the fire happens, that just feeds that fire right next to your home. So clear that all out. Other things are just regular items that you would keep, just keep an open, empty space because that's a lot farther for that fire to have to reach than if it was to just keep burning through the fuels right up to the side of your home.
Okay. So inside, from time to time, when you've come in, we've reminded people about smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, and all the rest of it. And I know that I recently just completed replacing all the detectors that I had in the house, bought a whole bunch of them. I think we had 12. It's hard to believe, but we had them all over the place. And so it took a while, but I steadily worked and replaced them, because the ones that were there were original to the house, and they were, with a couple of exceptions, over 10 years old. And we did that. Any comments about smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, best practice at this time?
Check your battery is the big one. Not every home has the wired-in style. And as you alluded to, 10 years is the max. You don't, if you have an alarm that's 10 years old, replace it. It's time for a new one. Smoke alarms still are probably one of the number one things that save the most lives, because they alert you early that there's an emergency, whether you can handle it yourself, get it small enough, or at least it gives you time to get out of your home and stay alive. So check those alarms, check those batteries. Carbon monoxide is just as important. Luckily, this time of year, we don't seem to have as many calls. People are opening up their windows. They're venting out their homes. It's not as bad. Wintertime starts getting cold. We start getting more alarms. Again, those will go bad in 7 to 10 years. I like to say 7 years on those ones, because that's a very important thing. As you've read in the past, there have been plenty of deaths due to carbon monoxide here in the valley itself. And so that can be a very scary event, because they're really, you're not going to smell it. You're not going to see it. It's truly an unknown killer. Mm-hmm. So make sure that you're checking those systems and making sure that they're functioning right. Keep them clean. A lot of people don't think about that, but they fill with dust just like everything else. Vacuum them out every now and then. That'll help the systems work properly.
Okay. Now, I know when we last talked, we talked a little bit about fire extinguishers, and we have fire extinguishers, and we moved them. We moved him to a place that was accessible and was not going to be right next to what might start burning.
Right, because we find that a lot is they in the average person's mind, and it did for me when I was younger. You wanted to have the extinguisher right next to the object where you were going to use it, so it was easy to get to. Flash forward many years, and I've received some training and seen some incidents. The people had their extinguisher right there next to the item that was on fire, but because the fire was so large, they couldn't get to the extinguisher to use it. So it started to dawn on me that they needed to be probably in a different location away from the object of danger, where they could get to it and get back to either extinguish the fire or get back and find out the fire was larger than they could manage and still safely escape from their location.
Speaking of escaping, that brings to mind an image in my mind of how to get out of a house, which at first sense seems to be simple. You open the door and walk out. But we have second floors of houses, and we also have basements in houses. And in our case, we have bedrooms in the downstairs area, and we have window wells. So you, and windows large enough so you can, and we did home inspection, you can actually go through that window in the well and out from down below.
That's good.
And yet I realized, haven't practiced that recently. And the same thing is true thinking about houses. I've occasionally seen houses that have ladders on the outside of them, et cetera. What's a good protocol for a two-story house? Any thoughts on how best to prepare if the fire were to begin downstairs and you were upstairs?
Well, they do make ladders that you can buy from most of the hardware stores, like a Lowe's or Home Depot, or they can order them. You can even find them online. There are small little boxes you can keep, and then when the need arises, you open your window, toss the ladder out. It hangs onto the windowsill, and you can climb down. My parents back in Ohio actually have one. So when the family visits and my children are down there, they know where it's at. They can deploy it out. Should there be a problem, they can climb right down to the ground and walk away. That's probably one of the best ways to do it. Some of your older homes, like you stated, do have ladders built right to the side. The downside of those ladders is most of the time they're made of wood. So the possibility they could burn, they rot, they're weathered. So they are a source, but if you don't continually inspect them, they may not be any type of way to, they may not be ready to use should the time come. So
So maintenance is important.
Very important. It's the same way with the exterior fire escapes you see on commercial buildings. Those have to be tested and checked annually because of the same thing. If they're not maintained, I've seen older buildings in my travels around the country where they've never been checked, so they're rusted solid. If you were to climb out on that stair and expect it to drop, it's not going to come down.
Okay, so all of the movies and TV shows that have the fire escapes going well up into the sky because you have multiple stories and so on, I'm thinking, okay, are there any fire escapes in commercial buildings in Palmer?
The only thing that I can think of the top of my head that would be considered a fire escape is the address across from the subway here next to Dairy Queen. Uh-huh. They do have a ladder built into the side of the house there, and I believe that goes back to the original days when that was some type of hotel along the route in the early days of Palmer.
Oh, that's right. That's where I've seen it.
And there was a requirement, of course, for the tenants or the occupants to be able to get out, so that ladder was built into the side. The other place that I've ever seen one of those up here in Alaska so far is up in the Hatcher Pass area by the old gold mine area in Goldman. The bunkhouses, they had built ladders into the end of those as well.
Okay, but for whatever reason, they have gone out of style.
Correct. They're not very – most of our commercial buildings aren't high enough for a fire escape. Plus, they have multiple ways to get down. They don't have the old-fashioned just one way in, one way out. Have a second way to get out.
Okay. So we've covered a lot of ground here. Literally, and I want to leave room for your messages, things that I haven't thought about and going to ask you about as people are looking at the beginning of a typically increased fire danger season.
You talked about the beginning of summer. It is getting that time. Looking forward to it myself, but please remember to keep yourself and your family safe. Talk a little bit about the wildland fire danger, some of the fire safety. Check your barbecue grills. No, people don't really think about that. Are your connections still good? Are you having any leaks? Do not use it right next to your siding of your house. That will melt your house. Move those grills out into the lawn, preferably at least 10 to 15 feet away from your home. Things that we just don't think about, especially when it's raining and we don't want to stand out in the rain. Right. Don't do it in your garage. We have had calls because of that, mostly due to carbon monoxide. They were using charcoal and the charcoal was burning. The smoke carried into their home and then settled in their home. Driving safety is always a big one this year. We have such a tourist group coming through. They're gawking and looking at all the wildlife, which they should be. But they're not always watching where they're going, so be very cautious of that. Motorcycles are getting out on the road. They're harder to see, so keep your eyes open and pay attention for them. They're a lot easier to miss while you're driving. Camping safety, if you're going to go someplace and you're an outdoorsman who likes to hike and do those types of recreations, have a plan. Let somebody know where you're at. So if they don't hear from you, they're able to start working on locating you. These are all small things that we get called for throughout the year that the average person doesn't think about, but we encounter. And so these are little tips that we try to provide to help keep you safe and make sure that you can come back next year and do the same thing.
That's a good summary. And I also like to leave room here to remind listeners that there are a lot of volunteers that provide this service. And I'm guessing you still have potential for people to join the fire service.
Absolutely. We're always looking for more volunteers because those volunteers are volunteer. This is not their full-time career. So they travel off and do things with their family during the summertime and the good months as well. So we always need more personnel to make sure we've got plenty on call to fill in when that need comes.
Okay. And how would people go about checking it out and seeing if they qualify, et cetera?
Number one way is, again, to go to that website, the City of Palmer, and link to the Palmer Fire page. The directions for volunteer application is on there. There's a little bit of explanation. Our phone number is there. You can call and ask questions. We can answer them. And you can find out if this is something that you would be interested in doing, and we can get you started.
Thank you. Mike Malevsky, and I've been here with Fire Chief McNutt from the Palmer fire department. And once again, I think we've reminded people that by doing a few small things, you can save a lot.
Correct.
Okay. Hope to see you again as the season moves on.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Have a good Memorial Day.
You've been listening to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local folks providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.